Good morning, Houston. This is Rick Davis.
This is Aaron Edwards.
And you're listening to The Things That Matter Most, the show where we talk about things everyone's passionate about but that matter a whole lot more than sports or politics. Each week, we bring you a different spiritual perspective. Our guest may be a humanist or a Hindu. Our topic may be a new movie or an age-old dilemma. But our purpose is always the same, to bring you, our listener, evidence to help you decide for yourself what you think is true and what's not about the most important questions of life. And we have another very interesting show today. Aaron, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about our show?
Okay, well, today we're going to be talking about the validity of near-death experiences. And we've actually interviewed someone on the show, as you well know, before that has had this experience. This was Howard Storm, and that was a very intriguing interview where we had the chance to listen to this incredible, life-changing story where Howard was actually so impacted from this experience that he went from atheism to being a pastor. But today we'll talk to two opposing viewpoints concerning near-death experiences, and we will interview Keith Augustine and Dr. Gary Habermas, who has also been on the show before concerning the evidence of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. But today we will hear evidence for and against the validity of near-death experiences so we can decide for ourselves what to believe concerning the afterlife.
Well, it's a very interesting topic to me.
Yes.
The whole idea of near-death experiences is very compelling. In my view, there are a lot of stories that are kind of hard to refute.
Right.
But today, the way we're going to go about this, our listeners know that in most of our shows, we have only a single guest. And on occasion, we want two viewpoints represented, and we have two guests. And that sometimes presents some alternate formats. And so the way we're going to do this today is that we're going to let each of our guests, Keith and Gary, present for about 5 minutes and to explain what it is that they believe about near-death experiences and what has happened to them, what evidences they have seen that have made them believe as they do. And so that'll be the first segment in our three-segment interview. And then we'll go to a break, and after the break, it will be kind of a guided discussion where we'll ask questions of each of them and give each of them a chance to share their view on the questions that we've asked.
Right.
And so that being said, why don't you introduce one of our guests?
Well, Keith Augustine is Executive Director of Internet Infidels. That's www.infidels.org, a nonprofit educational organization dedicated to defending and promoting a naturalistic worldview on the Internet. He holds a master's degree in philosophy, and in addition to various articles published on the secular web, he has contributed to Skeptic Magazine and has a three-part series on hallucinatory near-death experiences forthcoming in the Journal of Near-Death Studies.
And I'll introduce Dr. Gary Habermas. He is currently a professor and chair in the Department of Philosophy and Theology at Liberty University. He has a master's in philosophical theology and a doctorate in history and the philosophy of religion. He has authored or co-authored 25 books, busy guy, including The Historical Jesus and The Risen Jesus and Future Hope, and has written well over 100 articles and reviews published in journals and magazines such as Christianity Today, Faith and Philosophy, and the Journal of Christian Apologetics. Well, Gary and Keith, welcome to the show.
Thanks, fellas. Glad to be here, Rick.
Okay, that's great. Well, as we said in the intro section of the show, the way we're going to begin is to ask each of you to tell us your point of view on near-death experiences and what evidence you have come in contact with, or what experiences have you had that make you believe as you do. And so, Keith, we'd like to give you about 5 minutes here, and if you can tell us what it is, remind our audience what it is you believe about near-death experiences and how you have come to believe as you do.
Sure. Well, first of all, I think that near-death experiences are basically a certain specific type of hallucination. And part of the reason for that is because if you actually look at the experiences themselves, and this is not something that's publicized widely, but if you look through the literature, you can find that there are various kinds of cases where if these were afterlife experiences, as they, you know, on first glance appear to be, they wouldn't have sorts of features that you actually find in them. Just to give a quick, easy example, sometimes when people have out-of-body experiences, they claim to see things in the room and such, and, you know, for the most part, In the media, you've heard a lot about how supposedly this was something that was verified later by other people, but it turns out that in addition to those kinds of cases being actually kind of questionable, there are cases where people claim to see things in the room that aren't really there, and there are that's one instance of this sort of evidence that I think, you know, projects that this is sort of like a mind model and not so much an actual experience of going from one place to another.
Mm-hmm.
There are other sort of evidence like that. So the first is out-of-body discrepancies. But sometimes people experience sensations. Like, so I mentioned one case on this paper I wrote where someone says that they're about to go into the light and they feel a stab in their thigh and wake up. That's not something you would expect if your soul had actually left your body, departed, and went somewhere else. You know, you shouldn't be having any bodily sensations at all.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally people see people who are still alive during their near-death experiences. That's not, again, something, and especially in children, which sort of makes sense on the theory that this is something that's generated by the mind, because children tend to know fewer people who are deceased than they know living people. They know more living people. Another big point, something that I don't know how much we can go into today, but is that there are really profound cultural differences between near-death experiences, say, in the West, and what you find in Eastern culture. So, like, if you look at India and China, and India is a good example because that's one of the non-Western cultures where there's really been a decent amount of cases collected, you know, say about 100. And if you look at Indian near-death experiences and compare them to what you hear in the West, you basically hear things like, you know, in the West that, you know, people felt no pain, and they felt really blissful, and they left their body, and then they went through this tunnel and saw this light at the end of the tunnel. Sometimes they entered the light, met deceased people, maybe have had a review of their life, saw some sort of heavenly landscape, and then returned to their body if they didn't encounter a threshold between where they couldn't pass or something like that. That's sort of the picture you get. And not every person goes through all those stages, obviously. In fact, I doubt you'd be able to find anyone who went through all of them. But that's sort of the picture we have of the prototypical Western near-death experience, as I call it. If you compare these elements in Eastern cultures, you don't find, like, any of them, pretty much. I don't want to say you don't find all of them. You might find an occasional, say, an out-of-body experience or something in, like, an Indian case. But they're not prominent features overall of those cases. So I actually sort of looked at the existing studies and put all these elements together and asked, were these elements reported? And you find that, you know, there are some cases, well, maybe this is a tunnel, but it requires some interpretation to get to that. And they're very profoundly different. And I don't know what the explanation for why that is. Because if there was consistency cross-culturally, that could be explained as, you know, being the same physiological events. But if there isn't consistency cross-culturally, then you would think that, okay, there must be something in Western culture that is the source of these sort of motifs, you know, the tunnel and the light. But at the same time, there doesn't seem to be any clear-cut, obvious source for why would, you know, people go through all these different stages or, you know, some of those stages.
Keith, you got a minute left. You're doing great.
Okay. Some other things is that there's an interesting book by Peter Fenwick called The Truth and the Light, and I actually found a lot of these sort of what I call hallucinatory near-death experiences, at least near-death experiences that have these features that are suggestive of hallucinations, is that the supposed life review is what it's called. It's not typically, at least in his analysis of his cases, was not something where you have this profound judgment and you go through all the events of your life, but sort of like random memories running together, which is exactly what you sort of would expect if this was just a brain process invoking, say, the temporal lobe. A couple more points are that people say they go across a threshold that they can't return occasionally, and if that was truly the case, then they wouldn't have been come back to told us that, you know, they actually crossed the point of no return. And there's a lot of hallucinatory imagery in a lot of these cases, like seeing mythological characters. Like a Pegasus, for example, was mentioned as being seen in one near-death experience.
Keith, we will have quite a bit more dialogue after each of you get to make these introductory comments. So anything that you didn't get to, you're going to have a chance to talk about a little bit further in on the show. But let's go ahead and turn to Gary, Dr. Gary Habermas, and we'd like to give you 5 minutes to tell our audience what you believe about near-death experiences, and then why you have come to believe as you do.
Well, first of all, I want to thank Keith for his presentation. It's interesting. He argues similarly to the way Christians sometimes argue when they oppose near-death experiences. He mentions people misperceive. He mentions cultural differences. And by the way, he mentioned 100 Indian cases. The Osis Haraldson case alone, study alone, has 600 Indian cases. And thirdly, he mentions different stages regarding life reviews. I would concede every one of these points that there are some near-death experiences that illustrate all of these. To me, the main issue is that, according to a Gallup survey years ago, there are 8 million Americans who have claimed to have some kind of near-death phenomena. Now, let's concede that the vast majority of these would be very, let's say, personal and subjective. But there still remain there's still a remainder that are evidential. I have over 100 evidential cases. I went through those in preparation for our little talk here, and I have 56 highly evidenced cases across the board in several categories. Near-death experiencers, for example, who are seen by others, and evidentially so, even by numbers of people. Secondly, confirmation inside a room when a person has no brain waves and no heart. Verifiable, no heart, no brain, no EKG, no EEG. Thirdly, verification outside of a room that happens floors away in a hospital or even miles away, cases like this. And a few good cases of NDEs in the blind. Now, 56 of these cases, and the precarious position that Keith has is that he has to disprove every last case to argue that this does not argue for an afterlife. I think there are unquestionably misperceptions, just like there are in auto accidents, just like there are in police reports. There are definitely cultural differences. I've published on this myself, the cultural differences. There are different stages. But what we've got to respond to are the evidential cases where there's a specific amount of evidence. And now Keith knows, because I believe he's got some philosophical training, but he knows that one of the logical fallacies is called false cause. And in the logical fallacy, it's sort of like a logical error, is when we charge that something is a cause when there are multiple possible causes. And that's what I would say is going on here. We know that some of his cases are true. We know that there are cases of misrepresentations of data, etc. But there are some really, really strong cases, many of which have been written up in many medical journal articles. Many medical journals. In fact, I made a list of those just real quickly. I have a list of 10 medical journals, not 10 articles, 10 medical journals that have published material on this. Three of them are the Journal of Psychiatry, the journal called Psychiatry, and the Journal of the American Medical Association, three of the top medical journals in the country. Two of them specialize in psychiatry. And my point would be, these specialists who deal with hallucination would be best able to see what these are. Now, let me be real, real clear about something. I am not arguing, definitely not arguing, that the medical community accepts near-death experiences. Not going that way. I'm not arguing that everybody who peer reviews these articles accept them. Not going that way. I'm just saying if they are so obviously hallucinations that persons like Keith or myself, without medical training, I presume, without medical training, if we could see hallucinatory aspects, why wouldn't the medical doctors who specialize in those psychiatric conditions not say, not in my journal, this thing's not getting published because you don't have any data at all? So I'm not saying the doctors agree. I'm saying they think it is intriguing enough evidence to publish these cases. And I will add that many of the evidence cases have been published in these medical articles, and people don't whisk them away and say, and I'm not saying Keith does that, but they don't whisk them away and say, we can explain all those away. Your best argument is this cultural thing. If they could be explained away, I find that have a hard time seeing how they could be released in 10 different prestigious medical situations. So my point is, he has to get every one of them. I can concede certain points. If there's 8 million near-death experiences in America alone, what if I just took a shot and said, maybe, thousands of them are evidenced, maybe. I mean, I have over 100. I know some people have kept long lists. I know one guy who has 2,500 cases himself. So there are hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of evidence cases. And how are you going to hope to get every one of them by saying, some could be this, some could be that, some could be this? I think that's a real philosophical faux pas.
Gary, I'm gonna pause you there. Out of fairness, you've each had about 5 minutes and 10 seconds,
fine.
So that's worked
fine.
Out great. You'll have a chance to go on in just a moment. And we are really ending our first segment here. So, Aaron, I think we'll take a break.
Okay.
This is Rick Davis.
This is Aaron Edwards.
And you're listening to The Things That Matter Most, the show where we talk about things everyone's passionate about but that matter a whole lot more than sports or politics. And we will be back after the break.